of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. So said George Washington in his farewell address. Right now, during this particular portion of Vocal Point, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Peter Lilback. He and I co-wrote the book together called George Washington's Sacred Fire. Dr. Lilback founded the Providence Forum, and he is the president emeritus of that, and I have the privilege of being the executive director now of Providence Forum. And we're going to focus on this subject of morality in the public life, the public arena, according to the Founding Fathers, as summed up really in that quote from George Washington. Dr. Lilback, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jerry. It's great to be with Dr. Newcomb again.
Okay. I could give you quote after quote on this point, but I'll just give you this one and let you start the conversation here.
Sure.
John Adams, second president, said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." What did the Founding Fathers have in mind when it comes to religion and morality and the public arena?
Well, they clearly believed that a republic was a form of governance that required freedom, and freedom required a certain kind of people to maintain that freedom. And so I put it together in a series of principles that I think you can find each of these laid out in the writings of our founders. So we could start off with this question. Do you want to be free? Well, yes, I want to be free. Well, if you want to be free, then you need to have a government that protects freedom. And the only one that really does that well is a republic. A republic is a form of governance that the people have spoken into with leaders that are committed to principles. Okay, so then if you want to be free, you need a republic. But what do you need to have a republic? Well, to have a republic doesn't create itself. It needs to have a constitution. It needs to have a set of principles, of rules, of commitments, of covenants by which everyone will, in fact, work together. So if you want to be free, you need a republic. And if you want to have a republic, you need a constitution. But if you want to have a constitution that works, you need to have a moral people. You know why? As Washington said, and this is what's hinted at here by the Adams quote, he said, it's just a mound of parchment, a wall of words. Words on a piece of paper don't do anything. A political, power-hungry leader can jump over them as easily as a horse can jump over a fence, or as Adams will say, a whale can break a net of a fisherman. So in other words, a republic is inadequate because the words and the principles require people who will accept them and govern themselves and thereby accept the governance of the republic. So here's the logic. You want to be free? You need a republic. To have a republic, you need a constitution. To have a constitution, you need to have people who are morally capable of governing themselves according to words on a piece of paper. But to have moral people, how do you get moral people? You can't have moral people unless you have religious training. Why? Because human nature says, I believe what's right as long as I can get away with it.
Mm.
In other words, what is right? Well, at the heart of it is, as long as I'm happy, it's right. And so learning to live in a community where it says, I can't do that because of, let's say, the golden rule. I don't want that done to me. I won't do that to him. Or I want him to obey the law and not bother me. That means I have to obey the law and not bother him. And so how do you get that? You have to learn to love your neighbor. You have to believe that you have a duty, and you have to believe that your conduct, even when it's not directly under the scrutiny of a policeman or a military guard or the militia or a judge, that you will seek to do what's right because you believe you're accountable to Almighty God. So you see the logic. This is what our founders believed. They said, we want to be free, and that means that we need to have a republic. To have a republic, you need to have people who are moral. To be moral people, you need religion. And so they constantly spoke about the necessity of virtue. That is the power of a person to govern himself according to principles of what they're right for the common good. And that common good that was to be developed had to be taught because it's not inherent within us, because we are prone to look at ourselves as the end and beginning of all of life. live in community, to live in relationship. You have to learn how to love, forgive, compromise, follow principles and rules. So I think that logic is exactly what John Adams was appealing to. He said, look, our Constitution is assuming that we have a religion that teaches morality that enables the Constitution now to have an effect that will give us a real republic. And if you take away religion and morality, the whole thing is a sham. It's going to fall apart. And lo and behold, those words that we hear echoed also in Washington seem to be the story of what we're watching right now in our country as it comes and glued, because every man is doing what is right in his own eyes, as the book of Judges describes it. Anarchy means there's no law except me. And we begin to see chaos, anarchy, rioting, fighting, political will overcoming others without the ability to compromise. All of that is an expression of our losing that public virtue, that community of life that lets us live out a republican form of government. So pure democracy can't work at the end of the day, because the majority, 51%, can suppress the minority, 49%. Anarchy doesn't work because you have chaos. Everybody's fighting. And so inevitably, a pure democracy will go into anarchy, and at the end, you have to have a totalitarian state. You have to have a dictator. You have to have a monarch that controls you, because without his army and his power taking away your rights, there can't be any community left. So the American experiment is an extraordinary gift that we're watching to evaporate, because we're being educated out of our inheritance. And with that self-expressive individualism, I can do what I want, everybody get out of the way, that the growth of narcissism, we see the demise of the possibility of having a republican form of government. That's what Adams was predicting.
Mm. Well, I think one of the big questions is how to deal with schools and education. Because, for example, the Founding Fathers, the very same man who gave us the First Amendment, which today is being twisted to exclude religion from the public square, but this is one of the things that they said. They made this a part of the law, the Northwest Ordinance, Article 3. It says, religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. So the founders wanted to see religion, and to them that meant Christianity in its, you know, various forms, would be taught in the public schools. Today, you can learn about Kwanzaa, but the child can't be taught about Christmas. Today, you can learn about all kinds of different, you know, just about every view under the sun, but it can't be anything related to God and the Christian faith or the Bible. And yet it was the Bible that gave birth to the schools, education for the masses in the first place. So it's a very frustrating place to see. And what are your thoughts in terms of how to go from here? I mean, how do we recommend or remedy this?
Well, first of all, we want to establish the fact, it's no surprise that in many of the historic courtrooms all across America, you find the Ten Commandments posted on the walls of the courthouse. You find images of Moses giving the law. It's even in the Supreme Court chamber. Moses is one of the images that are there reminding our Supreme Court justices that law ultimately comes from a divine source given through a great prophetic leader called Moses. In the Pennsylvania Supreme Court here in the state where I live, you can go, there's spectacular paintings of Moses giving the law to the people of God that are right behind where the Supreme Court justices sit. I fought a case in Chester County at the courthouse that they insisted they take the Ten Commandments plaque down. We ultimately won that in the appellate course, and that's where the book, The Wall of Misconception, ultimately grew out of that experience. But so what we need to remember is that when we say we need to have a standard for morality, that's not an invention of right-wing conservative fundamentalists that are interlopers into culture. That is the legacy of that biblical moral character that comes to us. In fact, if you go back and study where the common law came from, it came from the English Reformation codified under Blackstone and others, bringing biblical morality that was the basis of our culture, which common law is recognized in our own Bill of Rights as a standard of how we should judge things. So we need to restore that history. We need to be re-educated about our past. But we need to remember, too, that our cultural change agents from the Marxist tradition, the secularist tradition, the Free Thought Society, the Atheist Society, they are opposed to any notion that there is a divine law. So they've worked hard to remove not only the Bible but all moral teaching from the school. So we cannot count any longer on the public school being the source where people will learn what is right from wrong. That's going to be something we have to pray that we'll have our families teach, that our churches will teach, or our schools that are Christian in character, or private schools that still have the right to do it. You go into the public schools, they'll have what they call values clarification, which means you have yours, I have mine, they have theirs, and all of them are equal. Well, that is not the religion and morality principle of our founders. It's rather establishing the ambiguity that creates then the inability to establish what is a moral law. And so when you look at some of our contemporary philosophers, they said, well, what is constitutional? It's whatever your peers will let you get away with. What is right? It's whatever your peers or your community will let you do. And so we're now living in a period of relativism rather than a period of revelation and right and wrong revealed from God. So we have to work on the personal basis, the home basis, and recognize that the schools are not going to support this. And we have to have the courage to, from our families up, to make sure that these principles of God's word and the legacy bequeathed to us are being taught to our own children.
Well, here's a great quote on morality, too. This is from John Adams again. He said, "If thou shalt not covet and thou shalt not steal were not commandments of heaven, they must be made inviolable precepts in every society before it can be civilized or made free." So in other words, even if we didn't have these rules that heaven itself has revealed in the Bible, of course, then we should make those laws the laws of the land anyway, because they help make such a positive difference for society.
Yeah, that's called the pragmatic argument. How can you have a society if lying, killing, stealing, constantly jealous, envy, striving comes along? What that is a formula for creating many castles where you're defending yourself against your neighbors every moment of the day, because there's no that's called a lawless society. The rule of law, which is such a great American principle, was basically something that came from the biblical context, because God had given his law to his people. And so there's a great letter that John Adams wrote, and he said, you know, the Jewish people are the great civilizers of the world. Because what he was recognizing is that with the tradition of biblical law, when that is put in place, you're taught to love your neighbor. That if there's a harm against someone, there is a court of justice to seek a remedy. When you are upset with someone, there are limitations on what you can do on your own. There are standards that are communicated. And that's what civilization is. In fact, if you look at world history, the great civilizing force of the world has been the Judeo-Christian tradition. It started the universities, the schools. It's created the institutions of compassion. It's moved toward freedom by restraining power. These are the great gifts of the Bible, and that's where morality ultimately comes from. But I like to say, in a post-biblical world, a wonderful starting point is to just get people to think about the Golden Rule, which, by the way, Jesus taught. And I love how Abraham Lincoln put it in the Civil War era. He said, listen, I believe any man can be a slave owner as long as he's willing to be a slave himself first.
Oh.
And he said, no, I can't be a slave. Well, how can you do that to someone else?
Oh, that's good.
That's the Golden Rule. In other words, if you think it's all right to kill people, that's fine, as long as you think it's all right for you to be murdered.
Yeah.
If you think it's all right for you to steal your neighbor's property, then you don't mind someone stealing your property.
All right, and on that note, we're going to have to end because of time. But thank you so much, Dr. Loback. ProvidenceForum.org for more information. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.